I still remember talking to with you last year, and I was thinking, what have I done? Like, I've just told the world that there's this magazine that has one issue in.
This is episode 173, and you are listening to Cider Chat. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are sitting down for a chat with Lee Reeve. He is the man behind Insider Japan, Japan's first and only bilingual magazine dedicated to all things cider. We'll be getting to that chat shortly, but first, a bit of news out and about in Ciderville. There's a couple little events I want to let you know about. One is happening out in Petaluma, California. This is with Ethic Cider. It's going to take place on April 3rd, a Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 7:30. And it's going to be with Cal Trout's senior scientist, Jacob Katz, to learn how agriculture can play a critical role in increasing watershed health. Jacob will share the fish food on the floodplain work and the benefits of partnering with rice farmers in the Central Valley. Oh, I love that kind of stuff. And Ethic Cider is going to be on hand. Now, Ethic Cider is a really nice cidery based in Petaluma, California. If you don't know where that is outside of San Francisco to the north region. In this area, you know, they've been really through a lot. I mean, we know about the campfire, that huge fire that just devastated so many people's homes and their lives. Oh. And then there was like flooding recently. So when I see good stuff coming our way in that region, I want to talk about it. And I really like Ethic Cider. I haven't met them up close and personal. I hope to. But when I see nice stuff coming my way about them and the fact that they're going to be sharing their fish-friendly farming practices that they employ at their Sonoma County orchards, and then they're going to walk folks there through a tasting of their dry heirloom ciders paired with bites from Frog Hollow Farm and Patagonia Provisions. Well, that's something I want to share with you, Ciderville. So check that out. I'm going to put a little link in the show notes, or you could probably go to the Ethics Cider website. Just look it up and Google it. It's Ethic, E-T-H-I-C, Cider, based in Petaluma, California. Let's next jump a month and look to May, because it's the Big Apple Blossom Time. That's going to be May 5th and 6th, and I downloaded their schedule. I'll put a link in the show notes. Some of their special events are a natural history of orchards. That's going to be like a guided walk. Then a cider in the Shire. Don't you love that? I mean, we in the U.S. can only imagine places called the Shire. Yeah, the Shire. I mean, that's cool, right? Exchanging ideas and experience in the Global Forum. That's going to be with Susanna Forbes, Gabe Cook, and Simon Day. So Susanna is the author of The Cider Insider. And then Gabe Cook just wrote The Ciderologist. And Simon Day is with Once Upon a Tree. He is the founder of that. There's going to be a chat coming up with him, a chat coming up with Susanna Forbes. She is one half of Little Pomona with James Forbes. They're going to discuss whether Herefordshire has more to give to or learn from the rest of the world when it comes to cider making. Wonder what's going on there. Well, you know, we all could look to the greater world like we're going to be looking with Lee Reeve today. So go figure. I know the answer, but I know it's going to be a good talk. That's going to be at Dragon Orchard. Then it's the Yew Tree Farm Perry Pears. Ooh, sample four single variety Perry pear pressings under the very trees that grew the pears. Oh my God, the hair on my arm is just going straight up. So that sounds fantastic. Then there's the Cheese Plowman's Lunch. That's the food. Apple teas will be served at the Tarrington Brownies. Will be served by the Tarrington Brownies. I think that must be like a Girl Scout, the Brownies, maybe? a guided walk through the orchards and fields of Putley. And then there's going to be a Tudor tasting with Gabe Cook, the Morris Dancers. Then on Monday, the Secret Life of Pixley Berries. It's a behind-the-scenes visit to the specialist ingredient supplier, which offers a range of products to the craft cider maker and makes use of its technologies to undertake pressing of bittersweet apples. Ooh. I always love something that says like the secret of something or other. You know, it's going to be pretty cool. And then I love this, a fitness walk. Because, you know, you got to stay healthy if you're going to be imbibing with cider and all those good foods. Then you could go back to the Yew Tree Farm, Perry Pears. And then it's The Overseer's Tale. Join Norman Stainer as he muses over the life and times of his great-grandfather, Harry Taylor, and his part in nurturing fruit growing on the Putley Court Estate almost 150 years ago. Dang, you know I'd love to go to that. That's going to be an epic talk. Definitely. Then there's a delicious lunch, another guided tour, apple teas served once again, Fiddler's Two, and more guided walks. This is just a little bit of some of the special things happening in a beautiful spot of Ciderville in the UK. Look for a link in the show notes or just Google Big Apple Blossom Time, May 5th and 6th. And I will be doing a little bit of traveling in April coming up to California. I'll be landing in Santa Cruz, getting my bearings, meeting up with the makers, and then welcoming the folks going on the Monterey Bay Totally Cider Tour, taking place on April 12th and 13th. We're going to be having a good time. I don't like wishing time away, so I don't really like saying, I can't wait, but believe me, I am really, really excited for this, just to meet the people that are coming on the tour and going out on the Betty Jane, that tricked out school bus with Annie as our driver, cranking the tunes, enjoying some libations on the bus and sitting back on the, it's just going to be fun. Sitting back on the couch, it's just going to be super cool. Going to Martinelli's, Serengeti Cider, Santa Cruz Cider Company, Tanuki, Five Mile Orchard, Rider Ranch, a cider dinner at SoCal Cider. I could tell just corresponding with the makers, we're all in that same rhythm. I'm like, it's going to take place soon. And really excited to meet the folks who have signed up on this tour and are going to be doing like the first ever Totally Cider Tour in this area of the world in California, showcasing and spotlighting that. If you are a patron of Cider Chat, you will see a little notification that there is now a bonus audio clip of Eric Bordelais, and this was recorded in September on the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy, where he was standing outside the cidery, being pretty darn transparent, talking about the cider-making process from juice to bottling, and answering questions. So it's really informative. It gives you a flavor of what it's like to be on a tour with somebody who doesn't give tours, and he's really opening himself up. So it was quite a pleasure. And you should know that we're going to be visiting Eric again coming up this September on the 2019 Totally Cider Tour to Normandy. The early bird special ends March 31st. So get in on it. It's not like you can't sign up later, because they'll be continuing on, but this would be the perfect moment to do it, because obviously it's always a bonus when it's an early bird signup. So check it out at totallycider.com. We set sail on September 22nd through to the 28th. lots of cider dinners, outstanding cider makers to be visiting, walks in the orchards, lots of sightseeings. This is a tour that you could do if you are a cider fan, like so many of us. And it's also a tour that you could bring a beloved who may not be so full in on cider. There's a little bit something for everyone. Check it out at the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com. At CiderCon 2019, I had the opportunity and pleasure to sit down and have a chat and grab a glass with Lee Reeve of Insider Japan. Now, Lee has been on the podcast before, and it was such a pleasure that first time speaking to him about Japan that I had to take the opportunity once again to catch up with him in person, because there's just nothing better than that. We opened up some Japanese cider, which blew my mind. I mean, just the opportunity to drink cider from another spot of Ciderville that I knew so little about, you know, wow, just wow is all I could say. And since that time, that first original episode, and now, Lee has gone through a bit of a evolution. And his biggest project to date is this quarterly magazine called Insider Japan. I actually have a hard copy of Insider Japan in my hand right now as I am speaking, and it's issue 4 from the winter of 2018. So that's the end of last year, but these magazines are something that you want to have like in your collector's corner on your bookshelf, because it's a resource. It's a huge resource. Truthfully, it reminds me of this magazine that I wrote for called Aikido Today, which was an international magazine on Aikido, a Japanese martial art, by the way. And I had a ongoing column in that. And I still have all those Aikido Today magazines, even the ones I didn't write for early on. And this Insider Japan, this is not going anywhere. This is staying on my shelf because I just love looking at this whole group of people in the world. I had no idea were getting full on into cider and are also major apple growers. So that's one piece of what he is doing right now, Insider Japan. I'm going to have a link in the show notes where you could subscribe to this. I highly recommend that. But it doesn't stop there. He is an enterprising dude. I mean, Lee's a guy who was essentially moved out into the world, maybe even kind of like pushed out into the world because of the circumstances of his youth, kind of a very different upbringing than I had, certainly. Raised by his grandma, lived in Tunisia, India, America, and now most recently in Japan. He looks Japanese, but he was born in Scotland. So this guy has been around the block. He is a hustling, really high-duty hustler, working for the cider scene in Japan and making it happen. And once we get through this whole conversation, I'm going to follow you up with some of the great stuff that's coming up later on in late spring in Japan, some of the events happening. So hang on to your glass and let's move to this chat with Lee Reeve of Insider Japan.
Cider is my first alcoholic drink. I was drinking Scrumpy when I was very young, and then I left and sort of just forgot about it. Somewhere along the line, I picked up homebrewing, so I've been homebrewing for donkey's years. When I got to Japan, the whole fact that I didn't know anyone there sort of got me back into homebrewing. And then from that, I got into the craft beer industry.
Right.
And that also was I think 2008 or 2009, it was sort of zero footprint. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, met the right people, and got into publishing somebody else's magazine, but I worked as an editor on it. Mm-hmm. And watched the craft beer boom in Japan, which is an amazing thing. We watched it go up, we watched it go down, plateau, mm-hmm, up again. Mm-hmm. And then it got to this point where it for me had run its course. You know, the machine had been let loose, the monster was free, and I just nothing that I could do. So I left. Two things happened about, this is 2013 maybe, and I ended up going north. So I'm from, I live in Yokohama, which is about 30 minutes west of Tokyo, sort of southern Japan. But I got a call to go to Aomori, up way up north. And that's, in Japan, that's apple country.
It's about, Aomori.
Yeah, Aomori is the northernmost prefecture on the main island of Japan. Produces about 82% of all the apples in Japan. It's without question apple country. And I went there, and it was November, so it was like just snow everywhere, and discovered, I suppose, is that there was cider being made. And the thing about Aomori is that the towns are really, really far apart. So the first thing I thought was,
and
like,
small population?
Very, very small population. Most of it is elderly, or older, I should say. And the first, the questions I was asking is if they had any sort of contact and communication, and it didn't seem to be occurring at that time. And then everyone kept telling me these stories about how the apple orchards were decreasing and the yields were dropping, and people weren't eating apples so much anymore. And then I started to research and getting data, and that took me to other apple growing regions in Japan. And there's really only two. There's Aomori, and then there's Nagano, which is in sort of central Japan, one of the larger prefectures. And it was, what I discovered there were that these very small orchardists were all giving their apples to the local winemaker, and the local winemaker was sort of tasked with just fermenting it. They weren't asking make cider, it was just ferment these apples and let's figure out a way to make money. Then somebody sort of clued in and said, oh, this is cider. And then puzzle pieces for them, for the Japanese doing this, fell into place. And then I immediately saw, okay, this, something's happening. And it's happening. And I sort of did a tour, made tour of the area, and sure enough, there were these people that were copying this model of sending apples to the winery to make this fermented juice that they could sell at a markup that could make up for losses of revenue, because that's what they were experiencing. And yeah, it just sort of came to me, this idea that I can do exactly what I used to with craft beer, but now do it with cider, and let's have a stab at that.
Yeah.
And it took, a good 2 years to, one, build the relationships that I needed, finding out solid evidence and solid data. And then I kind of went back and said, I'm going to launch this magazine, you know, what do you think? And everyone thought, that's a great idea. Yeah, we'd love that. And so I did, and then I launched it, and that was in 2017, December. And we're only four issues. This is issue number four.
Bilingual. It's folks bilingual, know that it's bilingual, so it's both Japanese and in English.
And the hardest part, I think, in the beginning was really determining who my audience was. And I immediately... it couldn't be a domestic-only magazine. So, in other words, the content that it's in the magazine is meant for three groups of people. One are people that know nothing about cider in Japan, which is quite a lot. It's the general public. Number two, it's to speak to the Japanese cider maker and the industry, the winemakers, the apple people, and to give them information that I can get from the outside, because I've got a network that I've created over the years. And then finally, it's to communicate what's happening in Japan to the outside world. So, and that was, people had tried to talk me out of that element and said, nah, you're aiming too high or too large. But for me, it was knowing what had happened in the UK with the sort of the revival, and in America with their revival. And I thought, it's only a matter of time when it does the same thing in Japan, because I'd seen that in craft beer. So I went with that, and now we're putting the finishing touches on issue five, and we're now jumping to, this has been 24 pages, and it's been a struggling as far as the revenue. We're now going to a 32 page format. We've got a ton load of new advertising that has come in, and within the next, within this year, will jump to 40 pages.
Wow.
And that's because of the amount of interest that we've been getting.
Well, I guess there's two different fields here. One, you have the makers, and their age range. Is it older makers or younger upstart kind of makers?
So the first side of makers, the ones in up again up north in Almaney, were older. They mm-hmm. were 40s when they started. Mm-hmm. Now they're probably in their 50s. Mm-hmm. And maybe one in their 60s. And yeah, so that seems to be about the median age. But what's happening in Nagano and is that there is a sudden drop of age range now. So I talk about this a lot in Japan, that Nagano as a prefecture is doing a lot for the industry because, again, this is more to do with apples as opposed to cider, but how do we recover the loss in general apple revenue, and how do we get the people back, the people that are leaving to go to places like Tokyo and mm-hmm. you know, Bright Lights, Big City.
And how far is Tokyo?
By bus, about 4 hours, I think. Yeah, about.
So that's the largest city connected to Nagano, yeah, that region.
Yeah.
And from Aomori, what would that be?
Aomori, you have to go there by car or train, by bullet train. And that takes, that's a whole day, I think, yeah.
It's, whole day
it's to pretty
get
there. Out there, right.
Going at like, what's 100 miles
right.
an hour?
So the bullet train speeds, which I don't even know. And so it takes all day.
It's fast.
Yeah, but it still takes a lot of time.
Wow. What's a bullet train like? Is it really, like, you know, kind of classy inside? Or
it's a very nice train, but it's very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think the new thing now is, like, people will put coins, they'll stand coins up on their end, and they don't fall down because the ride is so smooth.
Wow.
And that's pretty much a bullet train.
Elevated?
Some of them are. The newer ones especially, yeah.
And sleeper cars?
Do they have them? They must. Yeah. The regular ones, the ones that people commute on are seated trains. But, you know, there's reserved seats and standing or non-reserved seats. But it's fun. I mean, I hadn't done it in a long time, but recently I'm kind of on it quite a lot.
Yeah.
But, they're fun, you know.
I could only imagine. I mean, you know, compared to our trains around here, you know,
it's a different thing. It's
yeah,
a different thing.
And
it's a lot of it is the idea of Japanese, they call it omotenashi. It's this serving the customer sort of thing. And there's a lot of, you know, you've got people up and down the aisles with food
little
and
carts.
Lunches and stuff like that.
Fun.
Yeah.
So little sushi.
Yeah, you've got like little, what they call bento boxes with the rice and stuff.
Yeah.
And because there are no public drinking laws, you can buy alcohol. So, you know, people come in.
So, so let's back up on that. No public drinking laws.
Yeah, and this is...
In Japan?
In Japan, in the entire country of Japan.
So open containers are
Open containers
acceptable.
Are accepted. And for the most part, people are generally responsible. You can buy... mostly beer, but you can buy alcohol in many vending machines. There are no age checks. Like for cigarettes, you have to have a
card. There an age, a drinking age?
Yeah, 20 years old, but the
20, okay.
People just don't do it. I was explaining to someone the other day that you don't have the kid on the corner saying, hey, mister, you know, can you buy us a six pack? It just doesn't happen.
Interesting.
And as a result, so yeah, there are no laws, and people, we call it a train beer. You know, you after work, you go grab a beer or whatever drink it is from the convenience shop, and then you go home with a beer. It happens. It's just a way of life for people that do drink. So for that, it makes Japan, that's one excellent reason to live there in the first
place.
I mean,
that's kind of an interesting piece. Like from the outside looking in, I think there is a, and I'm going to just say from my own vantage point, and I will be transparent and said a big half of my family is all Japanese.
That's right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But with that said, looking, and I haven't been to Japan, and I have a big connection to it through Aikido, which I teach. Agriculture is not something that we often put in the forefront in Japan. We're often looking at tech, very focused,
yeah, that's true, right.
You know, wanting to accelerate up into whatever standard of living. So is there two different classes in a way with agriculture and the more white collar type of job, or is it a blend?
It's more of a blend. It's really interesting. I I would like to think even now that the people in the agricultural industry are respected. There is a sort of sense of pride where things come from. I mean, in Japan, for example, the markets, when you go and you walk through the produce section, most places will actually tell you where it's from. So you don't just buy a head of lettuce. You buy a head of lettuce that's from this prefecture or that prefecture.
Organic, is organic a standard, or it's a different standard? Biodynamic,
not really. No. It's not the same classifications. And I think there's even a few either beer the organic labeling is different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Japan for the most part, right? Things that are without the use of pesticides is very clearly marked,
mm-hmm.
To the point where you can find, depending on how local the produce is, you'll find pictures of the farmer, like, nice. On the packaging. So that's a part of the culture. People do care where their broccoli or wherever their apples
mm-hmm.
are from.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same, I think it's just because of the way that the agricultural system works, it's a sort of nationalized organization that runs everything, and they control the prices, they control the export.
So it's a standard pricing system regardless of what the farming practice is.
Pretty much.
Interesting.
And it's I'm going to say there's no co-op. That's probably not totally true, but in general, there's no co-oping. So everyone's individual privatized farm, but they give everything, or they give the quota that's set by this group to them, and they're guaranteed X amount of money.
Wow.
So there's never been this. Everything's been subsidized to the point where they just don't worry about things that happen, but. Because of the since 2013, actually, when we've had these, the weather has sort of changed the gaming field, and we've had storms in the middle of non-storm season, and we've had storms that instead of affecting the coast have gone straight through the mainland and like decimated apple farms, and suddenly,
wow.
You know, there was a crisis, and now the big talk is how do these farms get passed to the next generation, because there is no next generation,
right.
And if you know anything about Japan, we're currently experiencing that epidemic, so
and that there's not that many young kids, no, was no baby boom,
nobody's making babies anymore, our older population is now outclassed or outnumbered everybody else, and this for cider, I think, is a very, very important. It's very key as far as the direction of cider, because you've got, again, two regions, apple regions. You've got an 82% growing apple region, then you've got about an 18. So that number one to number two divide is massive.
Yeah.
But number two, the prefectures has not only realize that there's a problem, but they're actively doing something about it. So they're now offering plots of land. They're offering small orchards. Just come back and live here.
Wow.
We'll educate you. And that's going on. And the people that have initiated that are the apple farmers. So a classic story is there is a guy. His name is Kitazawa-san. Who's been running an apple farm for quite some time, I think since the 40s, has sort of gotten into cider making, and I don't know his exact reasons for it, but he was one of the first to say, all right, I'm going to invest in our own cidery. So as opposed to giving the apples away, he's chunked in some money for their very own cidery. And I'm convinced his 19-year-old son, who'd gone off to become a scuba diving instructor, to come back and said, this can be your future. And he's convinced him. So the kid is back. And he's actually, maybe I shouldn't say it's still a secret in Japan, but he's going to be going to, I believe it's England, to study cider making with somebody there. Well, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, is hook that up. But
wow.
He's just one, and now one of the things I've been really excited to tell people is, you know, last year in 2018, there was, you know, a single independent cidery practically zero. You had winery cideries, but no cideries. But this year, 2019, there are five that
primarily,
I know of.
Primarily cideries. So let's just clarify what you mean by that, because that's the other thing I was kind of interested in knowing, is that it does seem as if cider up to a certain point, and this might be what you're alluding to, is has been very wine-like. Is that true? Or and so what's the difference there?
Let's see. That's a
I mean, you brought in this bottle, which is like, well, it's a 375.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So it's a much smaller size bottle versus a 750 mil classic, like, wine bottle style.
When I talked to you last year, one of the things that I told you, and one of the arguments I was championing with the cider makers that I was meeting, was that the 750 bottle format was not the way to go. My reason being is that cider is a very, very new drink. They were trying to sell it like wine, like champagne, but it's not. Please don't confuse the consumer. Mm-hmm. From the very start was number one. Number two is Japanese people by nature are not alcohol drinkers. They drink alcohol, but in very, very small amounts and very small. And it's very, the reasoning is very simple. They get drunk really quick, and that's it. So they don't.
Did that happen to you in your lineage?
Well, I don't know the science behind it, but apparently there's a gene located and isolated that actually, for certain Asian groups, but certainly Japanese, more easily affected by alcohol. Mm-hmm. So my wife is a perfect example. She drinks a taster of anything, and she turns, you know, flush red. Mm. And that's a kind of, for some people, an embarrassing state to be seen in. So they really gauge their drinking.
That explains a lot about my family gatherings now.
But I think it's more, for me, it's more, it's straightforward. As a consumer, you're not going to, because again, these prices are premium. So in Japan, a bottle of cider is, on average, is about $25.
A bottle this size?
A bottle, a 750, a 720, 750.
Okay. Well, are you saying US dollars?
Yeah, I'm quoting US dollars. About $25, mm-hmm. US dollars.
But it's a much higher standard of living in Japan versus the U.S. I mean, a beer, what would a beer cost, like a draft?
A craft beer right now, the average price for a craft beer, a pint of craft beer, is about 1,000 yen, which roughly, like $11 maybe? I don't know the rate today, but about that price.
Yeah, so it's a little bit higher across the board.
Right, and as are most things in Japan.
Yeah.
But you've got this domestically produced product, and I mean, there are award-winning sakes that are cheaper than that. So why would they pay? Why would anybody pay 25 or 2,000
for a big bottle of
cider that they know nothing about?
Right.
What happens if they don't? And so it's very practical, the reasoning behind it. So I was going around saying no, go 330, go 350, go smaller. They are one of the first people to heed that advice.
Should we talk about this cider here?
I would love to.
Yeah.
This is the cider that I've been championing for a lot of reasons. This is the brand is called Tekikaka, and they are based in Aomori. They're in from a city called Hirosaki, which is where cider was born in Japan, practically. What makes this cider so special is, one, if you look at the design, it's very...
It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. And they're spelling cider as they do in France.
You do, and this
C-I-D-R-E.
Is... Yeah, I could do three cider chats about this topic, but essentially we've got a drink called cider that is a soft drink, and it's a carbonated...
spelled the same way?
Spelled C-I-D-E-R.
Oh, okay, as they'd spell it in the U.S.
Right.
Okay.
The phonetic pronunciation is, in Japanese, is saida, so it sounds the same as it's spelled.
So just a little bit more about this. On the bottom, so it's
Tekikaka.
Tekikaka cider.
Yeah.
And then it's Moriyama...
N. Which N is the Japanese word for park or farm. So Moriyama N is the name of the farm. It's the Moriyama
name of the farm. Okay.
Moriyama is the maker. And very important, he actually owns the oldest apple farm in Japan. or he's from the oldest apple farmer. He's a fifth generation apple farmer, and he's about 40s. He's maybe mid 40s now, and just gets it. Gets it from a lot of different perspectives. But he, thank you very much. He set out to make a cider to export, and he believes. So everybody wants the success of cider. Cheers.
Cheers to Japanese cider.
And
wow. Mm.
This is very unlike a typical Japanese cider that you will get. There's actually a nose on it.
Yes, it's quite an interesting nose too.
And you'll get profiles. You'll get apple profiles in there.
So it's like a straw color. Everybody's like,
It's not that
thirsty in the background, listening. A little bit of a very bright golden straw. Is a little hazy.
It's a little hazy. Yeah, which
they're not filtering it.
They are not at the moment. At the moment.
It has this doughy, almost like a challah bread kind of dough.
Yeah.
Not a different kind of sweet, just sweetness coming off of there.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Do you know the apple varieties?
Well, that's just it. So most of the ciders in Japan are forced to use Fuji apples because we don't really have anything else. So this particular cider, tekikaka is the word that the Japanese word for basically pruning an apple tree to basically give more air to the rest of the apples.
How exciting to be drinking a Japanese cider here. I just want to take a pause here. I mean, this is pretty cool. I've talked to a lot of cider makers around the world. I've talked to you, I've talked to Japan, but to be able to like sit here with you across from me and to be enjoying a very unique cider. This is like different from anything I've tasted in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about, and I want to just kind of note Jérôme Dupont, who just said the most beautiful piece, and really his last recording before he left us all, which was to use the apples that you have.
Right.
And if this, I mean, when you think about apples in Japan, you think about Fuji. Why not? And look what happened here. It's this kind of like exciting experience for me to discover this flavor profile. I'm not coming here to, I don't want necessarily a UK cider. I want what Japan has to offer. I want to taste the terroir here.
This is really, and for me,
very interesting.
Part of the journey has been this, because a year ago even, my definition of what cider was did not include Japanese cider, and I was I kept banging away at you've got to import trees, you've got to get rootstock, you've got to buy apples, buy the juice, have it imported. And then as I continue on this journey of meeting more cider makers, more wine makers interested in making cider, and now the big thing are the sake people that, cider, what's that? Can we do that? And then learning more about the beverage industry as far as crafts, these people making it, is that this is Japan. We just got to make do with what we've got.
Yeah.
And then actually I did hear that quote from,
of course,
beloved DuPont, and it made perfect sense. And then as soon as I started telling the cider makers that I am on your side with this, everything changed. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about this cider is that this apple that they've got is a local apple. It's
So it isn't just a Fuji.
It's a blend of. And there are a few.
And are you saying it's a teki apple?
It's being dubbed the tekikaka apple, right? The tekikaka, right?
Fun.
And it's a very small round. Actually, I think there could be a picture of
a
it photo here.
Yeah.
It right there.
There's two things going on here. It's very small.
It's
apples.
Very, very small.
Oh my gosh, it's smaller than a lady. very green, very and there's green. Some red hues to it, and like kind of like a vertical kind of striation
right.
on the apple itself. But in this photo, there's a hand holding five apples in the hand, and they're not falling out of the hand. They're that small. They're like a crab apple.
And they were, up until a year and a half ago, they were thrown away. I mean, that was just part of it, because it was to get the remaining apples on the tree bigger and brighter, and you know, they picked the ugly ones. And
they've been looking for a home in this bottle.
And he said he's one of the first to say, well, wait a minute, let's use the right, that's in there. Let's make cider with this.
Wow.
So they went... you know, again, their family, it's a 100-year-old farm. They took the money that they had, and with maybe probably some other investment, but they spent essentially about $1 million US to revamping their production facilities.
Wow, they've dove into it big time.
And he's not made a lot of money. Even now, they're just breaking even. I mean, just breaking even. And but he's bent on that this is the future of Japan, and this is the future of the youth. And again, this is not Nagano. This is Hirosaki. This is a prefecture that is sort of, you know, they don't want anything new. We know what we've got. We like what we've got. And he's
moving forward.
Yeah. And he's one other thing I'll just say. He's actually something that I think is very, very smart. Is there's a particular brand of sake that is now very, very popular in Japan. But it's popular in Japan because it got popular overseas first. And, you know, it was the sake that foreigners enjoy. So then all of the Japanese people were like, well, what? Let's have a go. Let's have a try. And he's trying to basically use that model for cider. Mm. He's trying to build a brand, a product that is suitable, that actually appeals to foreigners. Because if you drink this versus a standard Japanese cider, completely different.
Mm.
And then once that success is garnered, then there'll be this increased interest in Japan, and I just think that's bold. So he was one of the first people I approached and said, I'm going to Chicago and I want to bring your cider.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sending it. And his name again is?
Moriyama. Yeah.
And Moriyama, do you know what he did with the cider in terms of, he did a blend. What's the ABV on it? Do you know?
I think it's about maybe six.
I don't see a number on there at all.
Here.
And it's all Japanese
5%.
5%.
Yeah, 5%.
So it's a nice sessionable cider.
Yeah.
Would you say a lot of the ciders are sessionable at that? When I say sessionable, just for listeners to know, it's a low alcohol, so you could kick back a couple of these and still be out dancing.
The first ciders tended to be in the wine range, and they were at 12 and 14.
Yeah,
they still are. I'll have to double check with the stuff that I've brought, but this is one of the first that I've actually gone down under six.
Now, what's he doing with the yeast here? Do you have any background?
Yeah, and there, see, so part of they've only been producing for about a year and a half now, and one of the problems that they've had is carbonation, the consistency with carbonation. And their yeast. So they either...
Is he doing bottle condition in the bottles?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, is he doing adding a yeast, or is this...
No, I think it's just the second, you know, just adding the second fermentation with sugar.
Yeah.
But it's all bottle condition, yeah. And it's a home brewer for me. I've got zero problem there.
So no yeast. This is natural, a wild yeast.
Yeah.
Which is... You know, from, again, way on the other side of Ciderville from Japan, it's a novelty to be drinking it, but it's a pleasant, you know, I mean, I would have more of the cider because it's so exciting to me to be able to taste Japan.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is that.
I mean, think about that. Here we are in 2019. I was going to say 2017. We're a long way from there. And... Who would have thought that we would be having something like this? This just shows you the work that you've done to really help promote cider in Japan and getting folks on board, getting that excitement. Dang, man, I just got to do another well done.
You know, it's like
I'm
the
excited.
Japanese people doing what they can with apples. I'm just doing what I can with the cider mix that I've got. And it's the traction that's gained. And So Tekikaga is
crazy.
Their first batch, I thought was pretty much terrible, and I told him as kindly as I could. And when the second big batch came out, I was impressed by the change in the quality. Mm. But they've now gone into phase three, where they've got she's a lady winemaker, and they are currently re-evaluating their yeast strains because mm-hmm. they realize that it needs a bit of tweaking perhaps, but they want to get a solid recipe down.
It's so interesting because there's an orchard local to me. I've mentioned it many times on the podcast, New Salem Orchard in Massachusetts, and there is a very defined like jackfruit profile on the wild yeast, very defined. And here, this is that same kind of like uniqueness that I imagine if I had another bottle somewhere in like a blind tasting, it would totally stand out. Because
yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Like nothing like
yeah,
that I've
absolutely.
Had. And that's the excitement of wild yeast. That's what, you know, I feel folks say, well, what's the next big thing? Well, if you want to get the next big thing, it's wild yeast, because you could go anywhere in the world and have
right.
that uniqueness. That's
right.
like, that is beyond farm to table.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And there's actually another cider maker, and they're, I call them kids, but there'd be a group of four young gentlemen that are doing crazier things. And but one of the things that they've got
Good.
is a wild yeast, and it's what a wild yeast cider should be. And so there's, and this is happening again within such a short a time span from again what I call the birth of Japanese cider to now, and it's just beginning. It's really just beginning.
Really,
yeah.
really amazing. So let's talk a little bit about Insider Japan.
Please.
You have these beautiful T-shirts. If folks want to get a T-shirt,
I brought a few for CiderCon.
For CiderCon, but are they online?
Yeah. If you just go to our website, www.insiderjapan.com, yeah, we do sell them online. We've got this, our first version, but we actually will have several different shirts available very, very soon. So that's one way.
So that would really support what Lee's doing there in Japan.
Yeah,
where are you taking this, man? Where are you going?
No, this is why I was so excited to get here. So I am a publisher first. We've got this magazine. I'm a consultant second. And up until now, my consulting has been with the cider makers in Japan, finding out ways to impart what I know, what little I know about cider making, but showing them how to get access to other information. Then recently, I've been really fortunate enough to be asked to speak in a few different countries, so I did that, which was obviously fantastic, but what it did, it gave the Japanese cider industry confidence that I was maybe the person to do their bidding. And so they kind of took me into their little secret meeting and said, how would you like to be our voice for the industry? So Insider Japan now is basically the official media partner with the Japanese Cider Association, and there actually is one. And one of the very first things that I have been tasked to do, and one of the reasons why I was just in Portland, is to, and if anyone's listening, if you want to come to Japan, let me know, because what I'm trying to do is create these information share and information bridges where I can get a cider maker from, say, Portland or Somerset, bring them to Japan, have them spend a week or two. Mm-hmm. I think the Northwest Cider just did something with a bunch of people from the UK and the whole Keeving experiment mm-hmm, that they did, mm-hmm. but exactly that. And I want people to come to Japan and basically tell their stories, teach what you can mm-hmm, teach, mm-hmm. and then also in the same breath is to get these Japanese people out to cideries and, mm-hmm. and learn a thing or two. And I think that will do an amazing thing for the Japanese Saitamaker level of confidence, because again, a lot of my, I don't call it success, but a lot of my being able to do what I do is understanding the culture. And they're very, they don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to be seen as having made a mistake. So they're very reticent about saying, this is my cider. I had to go literally knocking on doors saying, give me samples. I'm taking them to America. And they were, you know, a year ago, they wouldn't have done that. And a year later, they have. So their steps. But so my next phase is to do that, is to create these channels where cider information can be shared. And then number three is we've become an importer. So we're now importing cider and acting as ambassadors for brand ambassadors for other companies. But to basically create a centralized vehicle for people in Japan to buy cider. Because right now, we do have a number of imports, very, very hard to get if you don't live in that particular area. So we do, you know, we will be basically an aggregate for other cider makers, plus our own, the brands that we carry, and then we will be a one-stop shop for cider in Japan.
Great. So importing, you know, not just from the U.S. but anywhere.
No, we've got a French cider. We've got an Australian cider. I'm looking at an American, and then I'm some UK stuff as well.
Yeah. Great, great. Well, you've really taken this, like, the cider by the branch.
It's
shook the tree. In the best possible way.
I didn't. A lot of it has to do, you know, and this maybe is connected with my upbringing, but, you know, my entire life has been survival. You just don't, people, I tell that story to people and they think, oh, wow, you know, you've traveled the world, but I was kind of like...
Pushed out there into the world.
I didn't go willingly, and I wasn't... So a lot of it is just, how do you survive when you live in this country and you've never been there before? And, you know, I gave up my day job, and I had 24 pieces of paper, and I... we didn't make, actually we're still not making that much money. And then there's a choice where, you know, how much do you love what you're doing? And it's just clear. I mean, cider is pretty much everything to me. So, yeah. And then now I think people are starting to feed off the excitement that I'm generating. I'm actually speaking quite softly. I'm usually a mile a minute when I'm talking about cider, but, people are believing that there's a future for it in Japan, and you know, people get these hits like Tekikaka or you know, Van V, who's on the cover. This is a crowdfunded effort, that the first of its kind. You know, we've got I was talking with Jenny Dorsey from Schilling. We've got a very strong group of women cider makers that are feeling empowered. I mean, this is cultural changing, and so of course I'm going to do everything I can for it. Yeah.
Wow, what a fantastic journey. So, the Insider Japan, you could get that online.
You can subscribe to it online. Absolutely, we are working with distribution to get it to places in other countries. That'll be a bit tough, but you can subscribe to it. I'll have a few copies, you know, for the people I hear at CiderCon. But if you, again, Facebook, Instagram, if you just follow Insider Japan and send me a message, I'll more than likely put one in the post
for you. Connect that way. Yeah. And how about exporting some of these Japanese ciders?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So there is somebody that I do know who is had success exporting to Taiwan. But for the most part, the answer is still no, and that has a lot to do with the cider makers not feeling confident enough. They don't have a product that they think is appealing yet. Tekikaka is bold enough to say, we're going to do it, and they just need help. So again, I mean, if you're out there and you either ex or import cider or want to know anything about Japanese cider, let me know. I'm really good with sending messages back, either through Instagram, Facebook, or email. Go to the website, but I will do anything I can to help you learn more about it.
Yeah, get connected. And I think that's a very bold move. You know, it's not unusual what you're saying for cider makers, and I think it might be important for the Japanese makers to know, the producers there, that cider making is an art form. And so anytime we create a painting or our piece of art, we get really, well, you know, we're kind of exposing ourselves to the world.
Absolutely.
And so it makes sense that there's a bit of a shyness there. And I don't think that's just unique to Japan. I think that's kind of unique to a lot of cider makers. I'm not sure if that's helpful to know or not. But by just going boldly forward where no one has gone before, this is really going to be changing the paradigm there.
I think so. You know, one of the great things that I've learned in just the very few days that I've been back in the States, you know, with the Portland cider makers and now here in Chicago, is we've all got the same challenge. It's the same challenge. It's the educating the public about what cider is, mm-hmm. and then helping steer them to a version of cider that they like. Mm-hmm. For a long time, I thought that was a Japan only. You know, I thought everybody loves cider because it's doing so well. But no, we've all got those very same challenges. Yeah. And I think once the Japanese people, the cider makers, realize that, they'll feel more part of the global cider making community.
Absolutely.
And that's really the confidence, the attitude that I'm trying to manifest in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was Lee Reeve of Insider Japan, Japan's first and only bilingual magazine dedicated to all things cider. And I want to tell you that this is a highly produced magazine. It's spectacular to look at. I love the logo. You should check it out too. Go to the show notes for this year, episode 173, and you'll be able to find it there. And then a couple other things you should also hear about that's happening in Japan. On May 25th, it's going to be the Nagano Cider Collection. They're going to have somebody coming in from Australia, a surprise, super secret cider maker from Australia, Yowza. And we'll find out more about that coming up shortly. And then the Tokyo Cider Collection is July 21st. So Nagano, Tokyo, if you're in Japan, you got to go, right? And another thing to just know, if you are in Japan or headed that way and you are hankering for a cider, well, it looks like Lee is in a new partnership with Jeremy Stunt of Authentic Cider. And they're planning to bring in Oliver's Cider and Perry, Pilton's. These are UK cider makers. Little Pomona. Oh, we know the Little Pomona folks. Hallett's and more. So stay tuned for that as it rolls out. I will certainly pass along that good news to all of you. Let's take a little pause here and I'll be right back. Let's hold on to our glasses here for a second, because I'm not ready to leave Japan, because I was looking at the cover of this Insider Japan issue during the break and looking at the t-shirts that people were wearing. And this is a photo of Vin V, which means in French, wine life. This is a new producer in Japan and everybody's in a celebratory mood. It's a beautiful photo with the apple trees in the background. And I'm looking at the t-shirts because I'm just kind of wondering, you know, are they t-shirts in Japanese? And I notice that there are some in English. And one in particular, there's a guy with a cap on, a little chapeau. And I notice the silhouette of Mont Saint-Michel. And I look closely and it says Mont Saint-Michel, Normandy. Now, that is probably not too far of a stretch because the Japanese do really enjoy French cider. So it just goes to figure that they're heading to France to check it out, as I am coming up this September with the Totally Cider Tour that I mentioned earlier. So this is just a little bit of a reminder here for all of you that might be sitting on the fence. Remember that the Early Bird Special ends March 31st for the Totally Cider Tour, going out the last week of September 2019. And like that gentleman there, you'll be able to bring home your own t-shirt from Mont Saint-Michel, because we're going to be spending the night at that UNESCO World Heritage Site. Go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com for info and reservations. There'll also be a link in the show notes to this year, episode 173. I'd like to thank the good patrons of Cider Chat who keep this chat thriving each week. There's been a couple new people coming on board here and there, getting in some of this bonus audio clips from the likes of Ryan Monkman on answering the questions on oak barrels, Eric Bordelais, and there'll be more coming up too, a lot more, so stay tuned for that. Join the Cider Chat Patreon page by going to thecidercat.com. You'll see it right there, or just Google Cider Chat Patreon. This is Rio Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!